to Populist. I'm Steve.
And I'm Kirk.
And this is our fourth and final episode of our very first mega month, which was all about college football. It's kind of been fun. I've enjoyed it. How about you?
I've loved it. And you know, it timed out really well with the national championship game and looking back already on the 2020 season. And I'm already looking forward to 2021 when hopefully we can get back to somewhat of a normal college football season and all the trappings and, you know, the pomp and circumstance and just make it feel like game day Saturday again.
Yeah. Somebody I know was talking about how it's too bad we couldn't have timed it perfectly, so the championship game would have been this week. But I said, hey, college football is still going on. We're totally in this season of hirings and firings and high school prospect signings and all that. So we're still there. So we did start with on the first week with the best all-time programs. And we did second week was greatest head coaches. The last time we did best fight songs, which was kind of a nice departure, a little bit of a changeup. And this week it's going to be best Heisman winners of all time. Now, we're not talking about the best guys or their careers, the Heisman careers, but we're talking about that one individual season where the guy actually won the Heisman. Which ones were the best and the most reflective of the award, I guess, in our minds? I had a tough time with this one. How about you?
I did, too. And yes, while we are looking at the individual seasons, I will admit some of my secondary considerations were a larger picture of the player and what they may have done over a career, not defining, but if two players were neck and neck, you know, what they may have done over four seasons versus two, or, you know, another season that was equally, if not better than maybe their Heisman winning season. Yeah. That carried a little weight with me.
Yeah. I kind of used it a little bit as a tiebreaker also for, if not getting onto the list, at least for placement within the list. I kind of did that as I'll talk about a little later. Who would you say was the first Heisman Trophy winner you were aware of? Because, you know, we get aware of the sport itself and then the teams and maybe some individual players, but we aren't necessarily aware of postseason awards. And I can still remember Jim Plunkett of 1970 was kind of my first one. What about you?
Yeah, you know, we talked a little bit about this. Plunkett was, for me too, I think both of us growing up in the Bay Area, and I would have been hitting like 8 or 9 at that time in my life. You're a little younger than I am. So, you know, we're just becoming aware of being fans of college football and what important things are. And I just remember everybody made a huge deal out of Jim Plunkett winning this award. And I went, okay, that must be something special. So yeah, I think it probably was Plunkett.
Yeah. I still remember his favorite receiver, Randy Vataha, the Plunkett to Vataha combination.
Vataha. Yes. Yeah. And then, of course, it didn't hurt that Plunkett then had a really good career with the Raiders, you know, after that. So it kind of cemented that Bay Area sports legacy.
Yeah, but he got off to a rough start initially with the Patriots when the Patriots had the old white helmets and everything. That's where he started for his first couple of years. And I think Randy Vataha went with him, did he not? I believe they were together with the Patriots for a while. And
then you could be right. I can neither confirm nor deny that report.
I also remember John Cappelletti from Penn State and his acceptance speech and how much was made from that when he won. And that was only, I guess, a couple years later than Plunkett. So, all right. Well, without further ado, let's get into our lists. This one should be interesting. For me personally, it was a different combination of sometimes just pure stats. There's a couple guys in there who I think also really fulfill my image in my own head of what a Heisman Trophy winner was and really fulfills that grandeur. So I went first last time, which means you start first this time. And who was your number 10?
Number 10.
You know, the Heisman Trophy has gone to some great players with great nicknames. Tom Harmon was Old 98. Ernie Davis was the Elmira Express. Earl Campbell was the Tyler Rose. And of course, there was Mr. Inside, Mr. Outside, Doc Blanchard and Glenn Davis. But for me, the greatest nickname for a Heisman winner, and he's number 10 on my list, is Howard Hopalong Cassidy, running back for the Ohio State University. He won the award in 1955. It's, you know, his name really has lived on longer than his legacy. I mean, he didn't have huge numbers in his winning season. It was only 964 yards. But in 1955, that was a huge number. It didn't quite lead the country, but it was still a massive number for a running back. He scored 15 touchdowns. And again, getting into a little bit of that career thing we were talking about, had 37 TDs over a 36 game stretch. But the reason I put him on here was not only the gaudy numbers for 1955, the great nickname, but he was a two-way player. He played defensive back, and in his entire time at Ohio State, he never had a pass completed on him.
Wow.
I mean, that's incredible. So, you know, why he probably didn't get the Heisman for the defensive stuff, at least I hope they considered a little bit of it, but I'm not going to bet the farm on it. That's pretty impressive. So given that he had great numbers, great defensive numbers, and a cool nickname, Hopalong Cassidy, Heisman winner of 1955 is my number 10.
Did he have nothing completed against him because he actually never played defense? He practiced defense, but didn't actually play in a game?
Ah, look at you.
Okay. Kidding. All right. My number 10, stats-wise, this guy could have easily been number 6, number 5, number 4 on my list. But I think the impact of what he did didn't carry his team maybe as far as it should have, and that is Ricky Williams, senior running back from Texas of 1998. He beat out Michael Bishop, quarterback from Kansas State that year, who had a good year, but wouldn't say that was one of the most formidable runners-up in Heisman history. He's one of two Texas winners, kind of almost more known for his personality, real laid back, a little spacey, some people might say, but on the field, very powerful running back with a good combination of that power and speed. Had over 2,000 yards rushing, 27 rushing TDs, 262 return yards, so he helped out in the special teams with a touchdown for that also. His year, he also won the Doak Walker Award, the Maxwell and the Walter Camp Awards. And he had the greatest percentage of first place votes, which was 43% in Heisman history up to that point. But Texas was only 9-3. And so, you know, there was no national championship, no big final bowl. So the impact he had wasn't as great as I would like, but still pretty great career. He broke Tony Dorsett's career rushing record, which had stood for 22 years. So the guy had game and the guy had a great year, but he's my number 10.
I think it's a great choice, so much so that I put him a little higher on my list. So I will save all of my bits of tid for when I bring him up a little bit later on.
Yes, I'll take a medium order of bits of tid. Thank you. Okay, but moving on, who is your
number 9?
There's only one guy who's done what this Heisman Trophy winner has done, and that is win two of them. In 1975, Archie Griffin was the first player to win two Heisman trophies, consecutive years, 1974, 1975. That in and of itself is a great stat and speaks volumes about this player. He had 31 straight regular games with 100 yards. He averaged 6.6 yards per carry, 111 yards per game. In 1974, sorry to do this to you, but in Heisman voting, he beat Anthony Davis by 1,000 votes. I mean, that tells me that the nation saw that this guy really had a great season. Now, could you argue that people are out there saying, we just want to see this happen? We want to see a second Heisman Trophy winner. It's like wishing for a Triple Crown winner. You could say that, but he still has the OSU record of 5,500 career yards, 5,589, and started. This is, I love this too. He started four consecutive Rose Bowls. He's another one of those guys that first helped define the Heisman Trophy for me, because again, he did it twice. To me, that speaks volumes. Yes, it's a little bit more of a career than it is that individual season, but wow, those two seasons back to back, pretty remarkable. Archie Griffin is my number 9.
Yeah, I wanted to put him, and if we were talking about careers of the Heisman guys and everything, then yeah, he's on my top 10. But for me personally, neither one of his years was that impressive. And he had Pete Johnson with him for a while, who was a big running mate, which took a lot of pressure off of him. And dang it, not enough East Coast writers saw that USC Notre Dame game, and Anthony Davis should have won that year. But, you know, that's just me.
Woulda, coulda, shoulda, fight on.
All right. My number nine is a departure from a lot of the guys I think we're going to talk about, since the award is pretty heavily dominated by quarterbacks and running backs. And that is one of the few wide receivers to win it in a modern era. And that is Michigan's Desmond Howard, the junior wide receiver and kick returner in 1991. He beat out Casey Weldon, the quarterback from Florida State that year. And the three more modern day wide receivers, not Oh, I guess you could even throw in Devontae Smith from Alabama from this past year, but especially I'm referring to Johnny Rogers of Nebraska and Tim Brown of Notre Dame are very comparable to Desmond, but Desmond just seemed to have a little more of the flash and the flair. He was able to make the really acrobatic catch, the really tough catch in traffic, and was a lethal kickoff returner, as was Johnny Rogers and Tim Brown to a degree, but it seemed like Desmond just picked his spots, and when they needed the most, he would deliver. And it seemed to happen almost every game that year. He led the Big Ten in scoring that year. He set or tied five NCAA records. He had 61 receptions for 960 yards and 19 TDs, a couple of rushes for 165 yards and two TDs. And then he had a 15.3 average on punt returns and 31-yard average on kickoff returns with one TD for each of those. So he scored each and every way that he touched the ball during the season. And then, of course, I think we all know him for that iconic Heisman pose that he did during the game against their chief rival, Ohio State. That's my guy, Desmond Howard, number nine.
That's a good choice. And again, if you want to talk about, you know, Swiss Army knives as Heisman Trophy winners, I think Desmond Howard is a great choice. And I know Michigan's one of your schools too, so it's got to feel good to be able to put him on the list.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, Tim Brown, really a great player. Johnny Rogers is one of my all-time favorites, just from an emotional standpoint, from the old Nebraska days. And, you know, he was definitely, they were both Swiss Army knives to a degree also, but I think Howard just, like I said, did it a little better and was a little more clutch with what he delivered. All right, let's move on. Who is your number eight?
Number eight.
My number eight is somebody you've already talked about, which is Ricky Williams, the winner in 1998. You already mentioned 2,124 rushing yards, 27 TDs. He set 21 NCAA records during that season. Historically, comparatively against other Heisman Trophy winners, he's fourth in rushing yards per season, or for a season, the 21-24 number. He's third in rushing yards average per game at 193. It only took him five games to reach 1,000 yards in 1998. He's had the most consecutive 300-yard games too. Most yards gained in a single game, 350. I think you are absolutely spot on when you say his legend and his star isn't a little bit brighter because he didn't do the kinds of things that Heisman Trophy winners are expected to do to elevate their team to either the playoffs or the national championships. But let us never forget that when Mike Ditka was with the New Orleans Saints, he traded their entire draft in 1999 and first and third round picks in 2000 just for the right to select Ricky Williams. So he is the only one-man draft in NFL history.
Right. Do you remember the photo the Sports Illustrated had of him in like a bride's veil, and Ditka was in a tux suit? So it was quite the thing that year.
Absolutely. So for all of that, you know, I do think Ricky Williams belongs on the list. Again, to your point, had Texas been a little bit more successful, I think he's a little bit higher. But as it is right now, Ricky Williams is my number eight.
Yeah, and how do you not like Ricky? I mean, to watch a style play or to see him interviewed or whatever, he's just a likable guy. However, he's my second favorite Texas back of all time. I'm still a bigger Earl Campbell honk, and I think it's just because, once again, I was a little younger and watching the pure power of Earl Campbell and the fact that he would just stay in for every play and just keep grinding out stuff. Just love that about him.
Well, it's funny. I think you and I both have a little love affair for hard pounding backs. I mean, whether it's Campbell, whether it's Bo Jackson, I mean, just watching those guys steamroll people, it was just awe inspiring.
And, my number eight is one of those hard pounding ground turfing or churning backs. And that is Herschel Walker, the junior running back from Georgia. He won in 1982. He beat John Elway, quarterback from Stanford. So that's that. Remember that race? That was a pretty good thing. And Kirk's laughing because he remembers John Elway's quote after the play in the Cal Stanford game. You ruined my season.
You ruined my career.
But Elway, as you can admit, though, Elway was a formidable candidate and could have been a worthy winner also. But Herschel beat him. And Herschel had an even better year the year before, but he lost to somebody even better than that. And I'll talk about that person a little later on my list. Walker, what I like about him is he placed third in his freshman year in the Heisman voting, second in his sophomore year, and then he finally won in his junior year. He had 1,752 rushing yards, 17 TDs. He had some receiving yards, some return yards. He broke his thumb this year going into game one, or actually early in game one against Clemson, only gained 20 yards. Then he played with a cast for the next two games, and he had 124 yards with a cast on versus BYU, not a pushover, and 143 yards versus South Carolina. Then the cast came off, and the rest of the country paid the price. He had over 183 yards per game for his final eight games, took Georgia to the SEC title and a shot at the national title, which they lost in a really good game to Penn State. So to me, that's the mark of somebody rising above the situation that he was dealt, going against all odds, carrying his team to some greater glory. Herschel Walker, my number eight.
I think it's an excellent choice. Once again, as we said, Herschel is just one of those backs that you love to watch because he could break it on any play. And before I go too much further, I'm going to say he's a little bit higher on my list. So I'll save my minutia for a little bit later on.
All right. Then if he's higher on your list, you must have somebody who's number seven.
Number seven.
I do have somebody who is number seven. And that is the first Heisman Trophy winner for the University of Pittsburgh. And that is Tony Dorsett, TD, who won it in 1976. At that point in time, he was the all-time leading rusher among Heisman winners. And here's the thing. The numbers I'm going to go through are not gaudy in comparative to some of the numbers we've seen over the past 10, 20, even 30 years. But this is going to be something that's going to be hard for you and I to swallow. Tony Dorsett, that season was 45 years ago.
I know.
All right. Less than half of the overall Heisman landscape, which is something like 85 years old. So this was still in the first half of the Heisman Trophy award process. So when you hear that he was still seventh in rushing yards per game at 177, seventh rushing yards in a season, 1948, seventh all-purpose yardage in 2021, those aren't gaudy, but back then they were. And much like Hopalong Cassidy, I think you have to look at it era to era, who's in front of you, et cetera. Again, won the national championship with Pitt. He averaged 215 yards a game over the last seven games of the season, which helped push them towards that national championship game against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, where he had over 200 yards. Tony Dorsett was another one of those guys that I identified very strongly with as a Heisman Trophy winner. So I'll stop there because I'm guessing he's on your list as well. And I'm just going to stop by saying Tony Dorsett is my number seven.
Yep. He may make an appearance on my list. So we'll move on. My number seven is the first quarterback on my list, and he's from recently in 2018, and that's Kyler Murray, the junior quarterback from Oklahoma. Oklahoma's done pretty well with quarterbacks. When you look at Sam Bradford, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, but I think Kyler is the best of the bunch because he's an excellent passer, excellent at passing efficiency. He put up the best passing efficiency rate at 205.72. He had over 4,000 yards passing, 40 passing TDs, which was better than Baker Mayfield, and where he really accelerated and separated from Sam Bradford and Mayfield, in my mind, was the 892 rushing yards and 11 rushing TDs that he had. He's fast, he's shifty, he's smart, he throws the ball very well, especially for somebody who's not overly tall. He doesn't get a lot of balls batted down. He knows how to change his arm angle and just deliver a good ball. He had a 4,946 total offense yards, which was number three all time amongst Heisman winners. So he's definitely has the pedigree. He beat Tua Tagovailoa from the quarterback from Alabama, and Dwayne Haskins from Ohio State, their quarterback, who both had really good years that year too. So it was a good competition. He was the winner, and he made my list at number seven.
Nice choice. And I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I'm going to save my information and news on Kyler Murray for a little bit later on, because I've got him a little higher.
Yeah, and I did last night, to be quite honest. He has been bouncing around my list. He's one of those guys. And I had him as high as number four at one incantation of my list. So I'll be interested to hear what you have to say. But for right now, let's go to number six. And who would that be for you?
Number six.
Well, like your number seven, my number six is my first quarterback on the list. And that is the quarterback that Kyler Murray replaced, and that's Baker Mayfield, who won the award in 2017. I mean, now we're starting to get into the gaudy numbers we've been referring to. You know, throwing for 4,340 yards, 41 TDs versus five picks. I mean, he averaged a first down per completion, 11.8 yards, 71% completion rate. You know, historically against the other Heisman guys, sixth in total offense with 4,650 yards, second in yards per play, 10.24. So again, every play he ran, first down on average. Fifth in passing yardage, second in passing efficiency, second in yards per play, a Big 12 title, went to the college football playoffs. This guy just had a monster season, and he's starting to prove his worth in the NFL now. But when you look at those numbers, it's hard to ignore five of these categories where he's top five or six that doesn't say, yeah, that was a pretty damn good season. So Baker Mayfield from the University of Oklahoma is my number six.
Yeah, he was under consideration for sure.
Oh, one other thing too, I forgot to mention, he started his career as a walk-on.
Right. And was a transfer, as was Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he also led the college football that year in planting team flags on other people's logos in center field.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. He used to upset me with his personality that year, and which I didn't think was overly becoming of, once again, my grandiose image of a Heisman Trophy winner. But you know what? I'm going to be a little hypocritical, and there's going to be somebody else on my list who definitely did not fit my grandiose image either. We'll talk about him.
Well, I think we agreed. We don't necessarily have to like these players. We're just putting them on our list. This is more of an objective thing at this point.
Yeah, but I still struggled on a couple, I got to say. But I don't want to paint Baker as a bad guy because I really like him now. I think he's matured a lot. I really like watching him with Cleveland. And so I don't want to paint him as being this horrible guy. He's not. He was just young and...
It's not like he's Johnny Football.
Yeah, there's another one, right? My number six, somebody you mentioned before, and that is Tony Dorsett, that senior running back from Pitt, 1976. He beat out Ricky Bell from USC, who's quite a good running back. And big time player, big game player, as you mentioned before. Just one of those guys that Pitt's everybody on the opposing team, they were focused on Dorsett, and he still had big games against him. And he saved his biggest games for when they counted most down the stretch in the season against their big rivals and for bowl games. That was a really good Pitt team, but he was the focus and he was the motor of it for sure. He had a 177 yard game, or per game average, 21 TDs. He had some, returning yards, with a TD for there also. In his final seven games though, he had a 215 yards per game average. He led the nation in rushing and, leading Pitt to their first national championship. Had 224 yards against his rival, Penn State. So that's one of the big games, and he rose to the occasion. Had that 22-year mark for career rushing that Ricky Williams later broke, and was the first major college running back to have 4,000-yard seasons. He was also the first player in history to win the Heisman, the College National Championship, a Super Bowl, and get enshrined in both the College and NFL Hall of Fames. So the man was respected. The man put up when he needed to, and that's my number six, Tony Dorsett.
Good choice. Like I said, TD has always just kind of been the epitome of a Heisman Trophy winner to me, and I think that's because at that point in time, I was just beginning to watch more college football, more than just my teams. I wasn't just watching Cal. I just wasn't watching the Pac-12 or the Pac-10, or was it even the Pac-8 at that time. you know, you began to watch more and more games. You became familiar with Keith Jackson and Lindsey Nelson and all these guys calling games. And so you'd see a lot more of the Big Ten and you know, conferences back east. And that's when, you know, you began to see Tony Dorsett, and the guy was fluid. You know, he had speed. He was tough. He was just a good football player.
Yeah, he and this other guy is going to be on my list a little later. I still, to this day, think are two of the smoothest running backs ever, with maybe the exception of Gale Sayers from old Chicago Bears fame, who, how did he not win a Heisman? But anyway, Dorsett, smooth. I still, as a Niners and Vikings fan, I still remember my Vikings on, I think it was on Monday Night Football, being subjected to the 99-yard touchdown run from Tony Dorsett, and he just made us look ridiculous. And I was so livid, but it's like, of course he did that. It's Tony Dorsett. Anyway, moving on, getting into the top five. Who is Kirk Treutner's number five?
Number five.
You've already mentioned this running back. It is Herschel Walker from the University of Georgia. 1992, I think you mentioned his stats. You know, he only had 1,752 yards and 17 TDs. But when you consider that in his opening game, he only had 20 yards and only was in for like two or three plays because of that broken thumb. If his average had been fulfilled in that game, he would have been closer to 2,000 yards and 20 TDs. So again, not big numbers, but still pretty darn good for a single season. He finished in the top three in the voting for the Heisman Trophy in all three seasons he was at Georgia. And it's funny, the reason I was laughing when you mentioned one of my next note under Herschel Walker was, and he beat John Elway for the Heisman Trophy. That's a plus in my book. That is absolutely a plus in my book. Remarkable three-season run at Georgia. You know, they had a national title in 1980. Some would argue it was 1981 season was better than 82. Then, you know, 1982, he won the Heisman Trophy. So remarkable career. Absolute. He was that legendary figure, you know, that guy that comes along, that Shaquille O'Neal type, that is like the quantum leap. You know, when we used to have these scat backs like the Johnny Rogers and you know, the fast kind of guys. And all of a sudden, this guy comes along who's a combination of speed, power, and football IQ. And it was just fun to watch him.
Yeah, he was the guy that linebackers and safeties were definitely afraid of because they just knew they were going to get punished. And then cornerbacks were afraid that they're going to get embarrassed because they wouldn't be able to track him down with his speed once he did get into the open. Amazing combination. If we were just ranking regular college running backs, I think he finishes second or third on my list of all time greats. He was that good.
I would agree.
Good choice on your part. My number five is that guy, that personality we were talking about. I just still can't stand. And that is Cam Newton, junior quarterback from Auburn in 2010. He beat Andrew Luck, who's quarterback at Stanford at that time, who had an amazing year. So, you know, this wasn't a gimme award. And he's one of those guys that, like Tim Tebow, like a few of the guys that you'll see, I'm sure Paul Hornung was this way also, that the team just rallied around and they just willed the team to victory. Auburn didn't have a ton of stars that year. They had, you know, a couple decent backs and a wide receiver, but not the best overall Auburn team that you're ever going to see, but he made them much better than they are. And I hate to give him that credit, but he was that guy, and the defenses had to plan for everything. They had to plan for him running. He was 15th in the nation in running as a quarterback, 15th in the nation with 1,409 yards and 20 TDs. And he threw for over 2,500 yards and 28 TDs with only six interceptions. So really good efficiency, really good production from that. He led the nation in passing efficiency at 188. His big game, signature game, was when they were down 24-0 to Alabama, their arch rival, and he brought them back to win and got the SEC championship, took them to a BCS title versus Oregon, which in my personal opinion is not that hard to do. And that was Auburn's first natty since 1957. So I try to be the bigger man and go above my feelings. Cam, Don't like your pouting. Don't like your cockiness when you win. Don't like the weird circumstances that caused you to leave Florida. Don't like the weird circumstances that surrounded your recruiting at Mississippi State and probably Auburn. And but you know what? That was a hell of a year. So Cam Newton.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when Cam and Auburn were going through that season, it just seemed like this Cinderella story that everybody really got enthralled by. But the thing that struck me is how average Auburn was leading up to that season. They have this shooting star of a national championship season, and then they suck again afterwards. So it just, everything just seems to go, what was going on here? What was happening here? You know, I'm not saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I know. And trust me, I've looked for that, but I think it was just the force that was Cam Newton that year. He was just bigger and badder than most everybody else. Let's continue on with your first face on your Mount Rushmore. Who is your number four?
Number four.
Cue the music. My number four won the Heisman Trophy in 1981. He was the first 2,000-yard rusher to win a Heisman Trophy. Yeah, it's Marcus Allen. And if you've listened to the pod, you know how much that has to pain me to put an SC guy that high. But there's just no denying, I mean, how good Marcus Allen was in 1981, including his bowl game, 2,427 yards, 22 TDs, set 14 NCAA records, including a season total of 2,342 yards. He also led SC with 34 receptions. I mean, he was their leading receiver as well as leading rusher, 256 yards and one TD. But showing that number, if he led SC with 256 receiving yards, I don't think they were throwing the ball a whole lot that year. Historically, against other Heisman Trophy winners, he is second in rushing yards for a season, second in rushing yards per game, second in all-purpose yards. He reached, again, 1,000 yards in five games. There's only three Heisman Trophy winners who have done that. Most 200-yard games in a season. And here's the thing that really stuck out to me. Incredibly durable. I mean, the guy had the most carries in a Heisman season, 403, averaging 36.6 a game. I mean, to take that kind of punishment and still have that kind of success and lead your team as he did, and he was one of the team leaders, it speaks volumes. So hats off to Marcus Allen. He is my number four.
Nice choice, Kirk. I'm so, so proud of you. He is that other guy, like Dorsett, that I think is one of the smoothest running backs to ever play. He just had that ability, that cutback ability, and then the good speed once he did get through. And USC passed more than you would realize. They had two receivers, Jeff Simmons and the coach's son, J.K. McKay, were there, who were not world beaters by any means, but the success in the passing game was attributed to the fear the defenses had of Marcus Allen. So he made his receivers better, and that's for sure. Nice choice. My number four is a guy who doesn't get a lot of love when you make lists like this, and I don't know why, because he's got the numbers to back it up, and if you remember watching him, if you're a little bit older, you know how good he was, and really good in the pros too. And that was Mike Rozier, senior running back from Nebraska in 1983. Beat Steve Young, quarterback for BYU, who Hall of Famer from the NFL, had quite a good year that year. In between the awards of Herschel Walker and Doug Flutie was Mike Rozier. It was a good run that was happening there. Great, great combo of power and speed. Over 2,000 rushing yards, 179 yards per game, 29 TDs, 7.8 yards per carry. That's a monster number compared to a lot of the winners. 108 yard receiving yards, 232 return yards. He did it all. Had 100 yard plus games in all 11 games that year. So remarkably consistent and doing what you were expecting him to do. He finished with 200 plus games for the last four games of that season. So he got stronger as they went. Broker tied several NCAA records, owns most of Nebraska's rushing records still to this day. And Nebraska was beating Miami in the national championship game until he got hurt and wasn't able to play in the second half. Miami took the lead. And when during our coaches' broadcast, we talked about this game. This was the 31-30 game where Tom Osborne could have gone for the extra point, but he opted for two and it failed. So they they could have tied or won, but that was Mike Rozier's senior year. All right. Who is your number three?
Number three.
My number three is somebody that you've already mentioned, and that was the quarterback that replaced Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma. No mean feat. You're stepping in the footsteps of a guy who just won a Heisman Trophy. You know, as we've said before, you don't want to be the guy who follows the guy. You want to be the guy who follows the guy who follows the guy. But Kyler Murray stepped into the role of quarterback at Oklahoma in 2018 and just had a monster year. You've already given some of the numbers, you know, more than 4,000 yards passing, 51 total TDs, 40 passing, 11 rushing. Passing efficiency rate of 205.72, the best in college football history. And he did it 1 year after Mayfield set the mark at 203.76.
Right.
And that same season, Tua was at 202.30. So it's not like he did this in a vacuum. He was doing this with pressure, historical pressure, current pressure. Historically, third in total offense, almost 5,000 yards a game. First in total yards per play, 10.68. Most yards per play in a single game against Florida Atlantic, which is 15. He averaged 15 yards a play against Florida Atlantic. I mean, that's just insane. First in passing efficiency. And he's been a valuable member of my fantasy football team for the last 2 years. So I have deep love for Kyler Murray. So Kyler Murray is my number three.
Yeah, Oklahoma definitely has kind of become the modern day quarterback factory, where Stanford used to be in, you know, the old days, and you can make a case for a couple of other schools in between, but Miami, USC. But man, Oklahoma, Sam Bradford, Jason White, who gets no love here, and he had great numbers also, Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, and then Jalen Hurts, who put up a good fight to win the Heisman himself last year. Big, big run there. Nice choice. My number three is the guy you just mentioned, and that is USC's own senior running back, Marcus Allen. You mentioned everything. What a lot of people don't know is he came out of high school and signed with USC as a safety. He played mostly safety and quarterback in high school. And for his freshman year, John Robinson decided to make him a tailback, but he was primarily a blocking back for Charles White. And then he got moved to fullback. And as a fullback, his sophomore year, he had 649 yards. And then as a junior, moved to tailback, had a big year that year. And then as a senior, had his monster year and won the Heisman Trophy. You listed all his stats. Leading USC as a receiver is pretty impressive for a tailback. And he set 14 NCAA records, which you mentioned. The body of work speaks for itself. He is, I think, the poster child for SC tailbacks and for SC offensive glory years. So Marcus Allen, number three.
And he's also a great role model too. That's the other thing about Marcus. He's likable. He's a really likable guy when he's done commercials or he's done the little bit of acting that he's done, et cetera. He just comes across as engaging, likable guy. He's a great, to your point, poster child, not only for SC football, but college football in general.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't even an SC fan back at that point because I hadn't gone to the school yet. It was just gosh, about a year away or 2 years away. But
so there's hope for you.
But I still liked him, and I've never been a Raiders fan, but I loved watching Marcus, and I like his personality, and I like what he does for the community. He's a good guy. All right. Getting down to the nitty gritty. We're at number two land. Who is your number two?
Something tells me our paths are going to begin to converge at this point.
I said the exact same thing.
Number two.
My number two is a recent winner, a really recent winner. He won in 2019, and that is LSU's Joe Burrow.
Imagine that. Guess who my number two is?
Is it so? So you were going to tell people that he was actually a landslide winner in 2019, 91% of the vote. And I mean, this was against a talented field, too. You had running backs like Hubbard with Oklahoma State, Taylor with Wisconsin, that both had over 1,900 yards. Chase Young was sacking everything at sight at OSU, but Burrow still managed to rack up 841 first place votes. The next person even close was Chase Young at 20. You know, it just speaks volumes about this guy, and for good reason. 78% completion rate. you know, 4,700 yards passing, 48 TDs, six picks. There's a whole bunch of historical stuff we can go through. But all of this happened on a tapestry where he won the national championship playing the 10th most difficult schedule in the country that year.
Yeah.
So to perform at that level against that kind of competition, just, I mean, that's in a once in a lifetime, you know, season. He's starting to have some impact in the NFL as well. But yeah, Joe Burrow was my number two. Anything to add?
Yeah, not much. You hit a lot of it. He beat out Jalen Hurts, who we mentioned just a little while ago, had an amazing year at Oklahoma. And Burrow just got better as he went on. Just kept getting better and better. He's also a transfer, having signed with Ohio State first. So he was the first graduate senior transfer to win the award. There had been other graduates, as we talked about, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, so forth. What I like about him is the fact that he did it against SEC competition. And where I'll be the first one to admit that sometimes they get a little overhyped about how good each of their teams are. That's debatable, but it's proven year in and year out to be a solid, tough competition division. You know, Ty Detmer from BYU is the only guy to have more passing yards and total offense yards than Burrow, but Detmer did it against much softer competition. And Detmer also had 28 interceptions where Burrow had almost none. So to me, it's not even a question. I think it's the best quarterback performance we've seen in a long, long time. And, about as impressive as it gets.
Yeah, I would agree. Again, you know, tough schedule, gaudy numbers, national championship. I mean, there's not a whole lot more you could ask from a player like that. In fact, you know, I'm just realizing this now that the top three Heisman seasons were quarterbacks with quarterback ratings. All three that I have on my list, Murray, Mayfield, and Burrow, are the only ones over a 200 quarterback rating.
Yeah, and that's why Mayfield just missed mine. He was on it last night. He was off it. He was all over the place. Okay, let's quickly recap, since we're getting to the number one. Who were your 10 through twos?
My number 10 was Howard Hobolong Cassidy from The Ohio State University in 1955. Number nine, another Ohio State Heisman Trophy winner, Archie Griffin, who won it twice in 74 and 75. Ricky Williams from Texas in 1998. Tony Dorsett, University of Pittsburgh in 1976. University of Oklahoma's Baker Mayfield in 2017. Number five was Herschel Walker from Georgia in 1982. Four, USC's Marcus Allen in 1981. Number three, Kyler Murray, also at Oklahoma in 2018. Number two was Joe Burrow from Louisiana State University.
My number 10 was Ricky Williams from Texas. Desmond Howard, the Michigan wide receiver, came in at number nine. Herschel Walker of Georgia at eight. Number seven was Kyler Murray. Number six, Tony Dorsett. Number five was Cam Newton from Auburn. Number four was Mike Rozier from Nebraska. Marcus Allen at USC. Number three, Joe Burrow, also at number two from LSU. So that brings us to our number ones. And Kirk Treutner, who is your
number one?
My number one, I will bet you bottle of wine, is also your number one. It's kind of hard not for him to be. And that is Barry Sanders, Oklahoma State, 1988.
Ding, 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 ding.
To date, it is statistically the best individual season in college football history. I know you've got some numbers. I'll just throw out a few just historically. First in all purpose yards per game, 295. He averaged almost 300 yards a game, all purpose yards, as a kick returner and as a running back. He's first in rushing yards in a season by a mile. He's first in rushing yards per game by a mile. He reached 1,000 yards in five games, again, one of three running backs to do so. Five consecutive 200-yard games. I mean, you know, you can go on and on, but you've also got some numbers, too.
Yeah, those are all just eye-popping numbers. He also had 516 return yards with two TDs. So, once again, he did it all. 37 rushing touchdowns, 39 total. He set 34 NCAA records. Some of those you mentioned. Most consecutive 200-yard games, five, which he's tied with Marcus Allen. Most consecutive 300-yard games, which is four. That's pretty impressive. Sanders' season of dominance gets compared a lot to Babe Ruth's 60 home run season, Wayne Gretzky's 92 goal season, things like that. And you throw in his bowl stats, and Sanders by himself would have had more rushing yards than most of the teams in college football. It's an amazing, amazing thing. His Heisman Trophy, a lot of people don't know, was accepted via satellite. He was in Tokyo, Japan, getting ready to play Texas Tech. And so he couldn't be at the New York Athletic Club to accept in person. So he accepted it via satellite. And I think, until the era of COVID, I think he was the only one to ever do that. Barry Sanders, very deserving, a joy to watch, both in college and professionally.
You know, somebody ran a great statistic in 2019 where they said Barry Sanders, in for the college football season of 2019, Barry Sanders by himself would have finished 18th in the entire NCAA in rushing amongst all teams.
Mm-hmm.
So only 17 teams in total did better than Barry Sanders individually in 2019.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just mind blowing. I mean, you know, it's not a far reach to say that you and I may have seen the best college football season a running back will have in our lifetimes. It could be that one.
Yeah. And I think it is to this point. Okay. Now quickly, before we go to break, who were some of your honorable mentions of guys that we haven't talked about yet?
Lots of guys who are out there, can bubble under, Tebow was actually somebody on my list. The guy had 20 touchdowns, 20 passing touchdowns, 20 running touchdowns. You get a guy like Ty Detmer, who, if you look at any of the statistical stuff, numbers were off the chart in terms of passing yards, et cetera. But the big number that jumped out to me, though, was 28 picks.
That's a big number.
You can throw a lot, but that's a lot. That's a lot of picks. That's almost 2.5 a game, I'm closer to 3. Quite honestly, when you look at some of the other big names, people that kind of make you think of Heisman Trophy, whether it's a Matt Leinart, whether it's a Ron Dayne, these big names that came out, they just didn't have some of the numbers that some of the other guys on my list had, with the exception of Hopalong Cassidy. But again, one of the greatest nicknames in college football history, and never had a pass completed on him. So I had to put him on the list.
Yeah. I was surprised because I knew he had a great year, but I was surprised how good of a year Eddie George had at Ohio State. He missed my list. Lamar Jackson was amazing to watch, and what he pulled off was great. But I'm going to say it was against a little bit lesser competition. I would have, if he played some more of the big boys, I would have been more impressed. Marcus Mariota had a very quiet, consistently good year at Oregon. But then the guys that I love who meet the Heisman eye test that we mentioned before, like Tim Tebow, Doug Flutie definitely had that magic moment with the Hail Mary pass. Charles White, Earl Campbell, Johnny Rogers, Bo Jackson, all those guys are Heisman giants, to me, because they just kind of fulfill that image. But very good. Let's take a break for right now. And when we come back, we will go into the guest list with our friend of the show, ESPN's David Hale. So we'll be right back.
Okay, show of hands. Do you stick around for the credits at the end of a movie or a TV show? You might, but most folks don't. And even then, you might not be familiar with half the jobs on there. My name is Bruce Rand Berman. When I came out to LA a while back, I found there was a lot more to this industry than I realized. With the help of some great friends and mentors along the way, I've been able to chart my course to where I am today, an experienced television producer doing a podcast about all the different jobs there are in Hollywood and how to get them. So check out Call Time on your favorite podcast platform. You'll hear all about the industry straight from the mouths of the real people who work hard every day and night in the trenches on set and in the office. Yeah, this is my podcast, but it's your call time. Don't be late.
Hello. Wait, what? You haven't heard the new podcast, Mojo Girl Madness? Good news. Season 1 is now available for binging. Mojo Girl Madness is a mad pod with interviews, rants, and stories about sex, relationships, family, divorce, politics, showbiz, and mostly your mojo. Find Mojo Girl Madness wherever you get your pods or at mojogirlmadness.com. And now, back to the main event. Love you madly.
We're back for the second half. Back with us, speaking all things college football, is our college football guru and friend of the show. He's actually, we've given him the title of guest emeritus on the show. And that's David Hale, reporter from ESPN.
The guest list.
David, thanks again for coming back and talking college football and specifically Heisman trophies with us.
Yeah, no problem. I'm glad to do it. I typically subscribe to the old Woody Allen adage of I would never want to belong to a club that would have me as a member. But for you guys, I will make this rare exception.
Well, welcome back. We'll have a drink name for you in your honor.
That's good enough. That works for me.
Heisman Trophy winners. This is an interesting category. Steve and I just had a pretty good debate. And I'm really anxious to get your take on it, too, because I think, you know, like we've done with a lot of the college football things we've discussed over the first big month we've done here on the show. This one's, you know, again, really a subjective category. And with, you know, over 85 Heisman Trophy winners, lots of different ways you can look at this.
Yeah. And what's interesting, I think, is that the subjectiveness of it has borne itself out over the lifetime of the award, too, where we've really seen large scale shifts in how the award is given. I mean, it used to be something that was dominated often by running backs. Now it is almost exclusively a quarterback award, save, of course, Devontae Smith getting it this past month. We have seen for a long time it had to be a senior, and then at least it had to be a junior or senior, and now we see freshmen winning it with some regularity. I think, you know, it used to be a thing where it was about being on a great team, then it was about great numbers. Now it's about having great numbers on a great team. The way that voters approach the award just on a year-to-year basis, I think, has evolved quite a bit over the years. So to go back and look at past winners is certainly, it's an evolving landscape. But it's also sort of funny, I kind of, as I did some research for this, the number of truly great seasons that didn't end with a Heisman Trophy award, too. So, I mean, you could probably do a whole other show on just the top seasons that didn't land a player a Heisman Trophy. I mean, even a guy like Peyton Manning, who will go down as one of the great college quarterbacks of all time, finished his career with that one. Deshaun Watson finishes his career with that one. Trevor Lawrence, of course, just finishes his career with that one. So it's an award that comes with its fair share of wiggle room and how we're going to discuss and vote on them. And then when you put them all together into one pot and say, pick your best ones, that is a whole other level of difficult rationale.
How much effect do you think the amount of information that is available about players these days compared to 20, 40, 60, 80 years ago can have an effect? I'm also thinking of, you know, back in the day, I don't know that we know a complete picture of a Johnny Lujack win or a Paul Hornung win based on numbers and such. Whereas now every sports information group can break it down and distribute it and really market their player in a number of different ways.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And this sort of started with baseball a while ago, probably closer to 20 years ago now, where we became a much more numbers data obsessed culture. And in doing that, started looking at things that were beyond just the periphery numbers of, you know, who led in batting average or RBIs. And that's trickled down probably football to the lowest degree. I mean, I think in basketball, it certainly got adopted a lot more quickly, too. And we have probably better winners and better award winners in both of those sports because of that. In football, it's such a team sport, and it's so hard to separate what the conditionalities go along with a successful play, a successful game, and a successful season to say, well, this is what this guy did specifically. Because, you know, how can you rate a quarterback who doesn't have a good offensive line in front of him? Or same with a running back. I mean, it's hard to say what a receiver, you know, one of the great questions about Devontae Smith this year, and I do think he was a very deserving winner, was, well, what happens if he wasn't playing with Mac Jones at quarterback? You know, in order for Devontae Smith to have an exceptional play on offense that will show up in the box score, that also means that Mac Jones had to have one. So it's very difficult to differentiate performance in football, which I think has made the analytics side of this probably the slowest to develop in football, and particularly in college football, where it's just harder and harder to study these things at the minute level that you get with baseball or basketball and maybe to a lesser degree hockey.
Yeah, we were talking earlier. It's the situation. It's the team makeup. It's the style of play has a lot to go into it. Because where guys like Matt Leinart or Tim Tebow, their overall numbers don't, you know, come close to Ty Detmer, Sam Bradford, Kyler Murray, you know, some of those, Joe Burrow, some of those numbers that went up. But you could make the case that both Leinart and Tebow, Cam Newton probably falls into this, were so instrumental in being the leaders of the team, the driving force. You know, they would will their team to victory sometime. They had such complete understanding of everything that was going on that they were just as effective as the other guys without the same numbers, which I think is also maybe why receivers don't get into the Final Four as much, because they're so dependent on having that big, big, big dominant season, and they aren't the sole focus as a quarterback or a star running back maybe.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of that. That's even just the stats in general don't even tell, you know, it's hard to take the numbers from a quarterback in 1965 to 1985 to 2015 and compare them, because the way that the game has played has evolved. And I mean, that's true to some extent, I guess, in any sport, but I think particularly in football. I mean, look, Babe Ruth's home run record and Hank Aaron's home run record, which has certainly been a thing that we've been talking about a lot lately because of the unfortunate passing of Hank Aaron, those are still comparable to a large degree. I mean, you're doing effectively the same thing and effectively the same sport. But you know, you mentioned Ty Detmer. Ty Detmer put up ungodly numbers his Heisman year. I think he had 41 touchdown passes. He also had 24, 25 interceptions.
Right.
That would not even – you wouldn't be allowed anywhere near the Heisman with that number anymore. I was talking recently with Kevin Wilson, who's the offensive coordinator at Ohio State, and he was saying, you know, look at my playing days. If you completed 55% of your passes, you were considered a pretty good quarterback. Now 65 is more the norm. And it's true. If you go back and look at what the average completion percentage or yards per attempt and just the standard numbers that we would use that aren't even diving that deep into things, the league wide or country wide averages have gone up markedly over the last 10 to 15 years. So just the way that the game is played has changed enough that it's hard to say. I mean, how many college running backs are you seeing getting 30 plus carries a game the way that Herschel Walker did back in his days? So inherently there's this amount of like, well, I've seen a lot of football and I know good football when I see it, and using your own judgment to say, I don't care what the numbers say because I can tell by watching this guy, he's really, really good. And I think that was probably the case for Trevor Lawrence this year. And he certainly didn't win it. I think he finished second in the voting. That was a reasonable vote for him because I think you could watch college football and say, well, Trevor Lawrence is just the best player in football. I know the numbers don't say it, but he is. So it's really, it's a very difficult situation to get into in terms of you want to be data driven. You want to be smart and thoughtful about how you're going to pick based on statistics and numbers. But there's this whole other gray area that can't be measured by those things.
It's the eyeball test.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was getting to about with, you know, Leinart, but especially Tebow. Tebow was a dominant force that year in football, as were the Herschel Walkers and the Earl Campbells and, you know, guys like that from back in the day. They were just the bad boys on the block. And you just saw it.
You know, David, if I go back 20, 30 years, players, student athletes stayed in school all 4 years. Mm-hmm. You had more opportunities. You had an opportunity to build a reputation, build some numbers. And you know, you as a fan, you could watch this player over the course of 4 years. I don't think that's – I mean, that has obviously significantly changed in the last 20 to 30 years. But is there something to be said for what I call the John Wayne effect? John Wayne finally won an Oscar for True Grit, but a lot of people said that was kind of a career award as opposed to he was the most outstanding actor for that year. As another example, people could argue that Johnny Rogers was better in 71 than he was in 72 when he won the Heisman, but did people feel like it was his turn? Do you think that has played into some of the selections throughout the years?
Probably less so of late than it used to. And first of all, I would always use Scorsese as that example, because I don't feel like The Departed is anything close to his greatest film, but yeah, career award. I think another great example of that is Herschel in 82. I mean, great season in 82, but Herschel's rookie year in 80 as a freshman was his best. I think you could make a case that Herschel in 1980 is the most dominant a college football player has ever been in a college football season. And he didn't win the award that year. Why? Because mostly they didn't give it to freshmen. And so him getting it as a junior was sort of the, oh, well, now you've earned your time because you've done it long enough. We don't view it that way anymore. So it doesn't really, I don't think it tends to be the case anymore. You look back, I think 13 was a good example of a year where there was a lot of folks who didn't feel quite comfortable giving it to Jameis Winston, despite the fact that he was clearly the best player in college football, but he had off-field issues that people were worried about. There was not a consensus number two because nobody else had a season anywhere near as good as Jameis, but they kind of gave a lot of votes to A.J. McCarron almost as a career award because you were a good quarterback at Alabama and won some national championships. So here, we're going to throw some votes your way. But the flip side of that, I think what you've seen in the last decade is a lot of off the board winners. You know, if we look at Heisman odds in August and then look at who actually wins it, almost every year it has been a surprise candidate. I don't think many people, if anybody, had Devontae Smith certainly this year, but you go back and look at some of the winners, Lamar Jackson and Johnny Manziel and Kyler Murray, of course, is another one that comes to mind, that these guys didn't really have the pedigree beforehand. Mariota and Baker Mayfield are probably the two guys that had a distinct sort of case that was being built from day one. The other guys have emerged largely midway through the season, and we've built the narrative around them after the fact. Doing it before the fact is just, it's become a rarity these days. Yeah.
Now, would it be safe to say that there's a pack of players at the beginning of a season and one emerges from that pack? Or are you saying there's somebody that comes completely from left field?
There tends to be a little bit of a pack that tends to hold true. And certainly that was the case with Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields this year. But I think it's largely, you know, when you go back and look by year, over the last decade, there's been more years than not where guys have just come from completely off the board. Jameis Winston and Johnny Manziel are both perfectly good examples of guys who, I mean, you couldn't have gotten odds for them in August. They weren't even, in some cases, in Jameis' case, I don't know if he was even named the starting QB at the point that the first odds were coming out. And so I think we are more willing to see a narrative develop over the course of a year and vote for them now. I think for a long time, and this was probably particularly more true before the age of the internet, where highlights were being shared left and right, you kind of had to read in the paper and turn on SportsCenter to find what you were looking for in years before social media. But I think a little bit of that, like the Lamar Jackson leap over the Syracuse player in week two in his Heisman year. And that play, I mean, you can't really explain Lamar Jackson's athleticism on a newspaper page, as much as I would love to be able to do that in my job. You kind of had to see Lamar Jackson to understand how great he was. I don't know if Lamar Jackson's season would have been a Heisman season in another era of people not truly seeing these players. And we talk about social media now, but shift back even further, and you want to talk about like up until probably the late 90s in the BCS era, you didn't even see those games on TV. You know, now every game is on TV somewhere. For a long time, the idea of having a game on TV, period, was something of a success story for a college. So just I think seeing players has changed a little bit of that too, whereas like, you know, you needed to kind of understand who Herschel was after 2 years before you would vote Herschel. Whereas, you know, in 1980, if Herschel's 1980 season happened today, he would have won the Heisman that year, hands down, running away. Everyone would have been talking about it. But how many games did he play that year that people didn't see, that voters didn't see? And how many of those same voters just kind of had it as rule of thumb, we're not going to vote for a freshman. So you asked me to rank Herschel's seasons. 1980 is the one I'm putting at the top. 1982 is the one that he got the award because it took 2 years of kind of building up that candidacy back then that I don't think that requires now.
Yeah, I was going to actually kind of mention something along those lines because you talked about, you know, what Lamar Jackson had done. And I love thinking back to some of those signature moments that probably propelled people to the award, whether it's Flutie in the Hail Mary, whether it's, you know, even to some extent, Desmond Howard in the Heisman pose. I mean, these are all signature moments that probably got these guys that extra yard, you know, Herschel or Bo Jackson barreling over people.
Yeah.
Carson Palmer with his big flip into the end zone versus Notre Dame, you know, things like that.
Well, it's, I think that's 100% true. People sort of make a lot of the idea of a Heisman moment. I would almost say now it's more of a viral moment. What we used to call a Heisman moment is what we call viral moments now. It's that play that everybody sees because it just for one Saturday captured the imagination of everybody. And I would actually argue there was a punt return or a kick return. I honestly can't remember which one that Devontae Smith had towards the end of the season this year, when he was not really on people's radar for the Heisman. He was having a really good year, but he wasn't like the guy at the top of anybody's ballot. And he had this return for a touchdown that everybody kind of sat back and we were like, shouldn't we be talking about this guy more? And that wasn't what won him the award, but that was what shifted the conversation around him so that people started paying more attention. And I don't think he would have won the award without that moment. And if I'm remembering correctly, it was a game where he only had like two catches for 25 yards, but it was that special teams play that really changed the dynamic of how people were talking about him. And I think, you know, you mentioned Flutie, and, you know, we'll get to my list here at the end, but I don't know if his Heisman season is one of the 10 best Heisman seasons, but I know that Hail Mary play is one of the most magical and talked about and definitive iconic plays in college football history. And so I put him on my list because to me, that is the Heisman moment of all Heisman moments. And so it belongs on the list.
Yeah, absolutely. One last question. Obviously, we're talking about the numbers are grabbing the voters' attention and so forth. Charles Woodson, the only pure defensive player to ever win. And granted, they let him do a lot of wide receiver stuff that year, I think partially in the attempt to prop him up for the Heisman Trophy. And we had some guys back in the old days, Johnny Lujack, so forth, who would play both sides of the ball. We have guys like Alan Page, Leroy Selman, some others who have come close in the voting but haven't conquered. Do you think we'll ever see the voters give credit for outstanding defensive play that becomes Heisman worthy as opposed to just the Butkus Award or some other specialty defensive award?
I think it'll happen again at some point. I mean, we started thinking for a long time that it wouldn't happen with a receiver again until Devontae Smith just did it. Part of the problem is there is not this array of statistics that are as meaningful for defensive players the way that they are used, particularly for quarterbacks, but also for running backs. You know, even a number like interceptions or sacks are so dependent on what you have around you. You know, it's easier to rack up a bunch of sacks if you've got a guy on the other side of your defensive front that commands a double team. It's much easier to pick off passes if your defensive front is getting pressure and forcing the quarterback to make bad throws. So some of the most, I think, insightful defensive stats don't translate super well to the average voter. And I look at a guy like Notre Dame's Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah this year. He was the best player in the ACC on the defensive side of the ball. There was not a single stat that I could point to explain to you why. You just kind of had to know the role that he played on that defense. And if there's a guy on defense since Charles Woodson who has deserved it, who didn't get it, and I'm not sure, I mean, he certainly had numbers, but no number kind of translates into how big he was Ndamukong Suh at Nebraska. And those were, I think, 09 to 2012. That guy just dominated. I mean, there was not a defensive force more dominant than him. So that's the uphill battle that defensive guys, more than anybody, need a narrative to sell along with whatever their numbers are. And it's just harder, I think, for them to build that sales pitch, that elevator pitch to a voter than it is. Particularly quarterbacks have the easiest time doing it, and that's why they win the most. Receivers and running backs have a little bit easier time than certainly defensive players. I think it'll happen again. It's just going to take a really special player to make it happen.
Yeah, it's nothing that you can really, as a school, package in your PR campaign ahead of time about, you know, this guy is going to end up in the backfield so much more, you know, higher percentage. But you had guys like J.J. Watt and Nick Bosa, Junior Seau, you know, these guys who just lived at disrupting other offenses, and people had a game plan against them. And it would be nice to see them get some recognition.
Defensive players also have an indirect effect on the game as well as a direct effect on the game. You know, if you're game planning against a J.J. Watt, you might not get the sack, but they're planning for you and running away from you. I mean, I think defensive players do affect the game, but it's more direct and indirect, whereas offensive players, to me, are much more of a direct effect on the game.
Yeah, I've had plenty of conversations with defensive backs who love me for saying this, that the best cornerback in the country is never going to have the most interceptions because smart quarterbacks don't throw it their way. And they're like, yes, yes, please remind people I don't have to have a ton of picks to have had a great season.
That's exactly
That's right. Yeah. Ty Law would agree with you. Okay, well, we know that we are very quarterback and running back heavy on this award, so their presence on people's list would not be surprising. Who is David Hale's top 10 list, starting with number 10?
Well, as I said, I don't know that he is genuinely in the top 10, but I gave him the number 10 spot because of one single play. But Doug Flutie is number 10 for me, and I will not apologize for it because Doug Flutie's season was like one of the ones that made me, like when I was growing up, that's what I thought of as a great football season. And so Doug Flutie's at number 10 for me. Number nine, I have Charlie Ward from his Florida State national championship season. Again, a guy who did not turn into a great pro, but was, if you watch Charlie Ward in 93, he belongs there. Number eight, I have Herschel Walker. I would put him higher up if I was counting his 1980 season, for only counting his 82 right. Heisman season. He's a little lower down in the list, but I got Herschel at number eight. Number seven, Bo Jackson from 85. Number six, again, another guy near and dear to my heart that I put there, A, because I'm a Syracuse alum, and B, because him winning this award means something beyond just the award, but Ernie nice. Davis as the first black winner of the Heisman Trophy. Number five, I've got Earl Campbell. Number four, I don't know how you differentiate. I put him at number four because you can just add them together and find the average of the two. But Archie Griffin, as the only two-time winner, goes at number four for me. Number three is Cam Newton. I think the more I go back and look at that 2010 Auburn season, the more I realize that was just Cam Newton and a decent football team around him that he just carried on his back to a national championship. And I'll put in right here's where I will put in my plug that I wish we could give out the award after bowl season. Now, used to be there were bowls. Most teams didn't play in them. They were more of an extra event at the end of the season that shouldn't be impacted. Now there's such a critical part of what college football season is. We should be voting on the best player after the bowls are played.
I think we both agree 1,000%.
Number two is Joe Burrow from 2019, which I think in many ways we can count as the greatest statistical football season that has ever been played. But number one is the guy who has both probably the best statistical season and the best season period in college football history. That is Barry Sanders. I defy anyone to argue with that pick. Barry Sanders in 1988 was as good as any college football player who has ever stepped on a field.
Yeah, you match your number one and two match mine for sure. Sanders, that was an eye popper. For sure. And he's one of the few guys that really carried it on into the pros and got even better. Perhaps you can make that argument as well.
Yeah, that's another really interesting thing. Is how many guys that won that did not go on to be great pros. I think that's another thing that's starting to change a little bit now more too, is where the winners are maybe a little more NFL poised for success. Whereas for so long, we had the Eric Crouches and Troy Smiths of the world who didn't really go on to do a whole heck of a lot. They were college players, not NFL players. Tim Tebow, of course, falls in that category too. So, I think the Heisman is becoming more of a little more of a race for guys who are good in the next level too. But without question, Barry Sanders is the best that did it in college, the best that's done it in the pros as a running back. And he could probably come back now and run for 1,000 yards for somebody.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Charlie Ward could lead a fast break and hit a clutch 3 points, any day of the week.
Hey, listen, the Knicks fans don't have a whole lot to cling to as basketball fans anyway, so we'll give them our Heisman winner.
We're the only team with a Heisman winner, damn it. Well, David, we can't thank you enough again for coming on and helping us finish our college football mega month. We didn't have a guest for the fight songs last week because there just wasn't a real expertise for that. But you were definitely our go-to guy in the other 3 weeks, and we appreciate you being here as always.
A lot of great insight, a lot of great conversation. Hope we get a chance to talk again.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, that was great. Always enjoy talking to David, and that was a pretty particularly good conversation. He was bringing a lot of insight to both the new versus some of the old stuff, because that's, for me, that was part of the fun of researching all this, is comparing the old to the new and the history of the Heisman.
Hey, you're right. I mean, it is always so great to talk with David. He knows his Heisman stuff, and one of my favorite Heisman Trophy actually sports stories is a story that was related by Dan Jenkins, the great sports writer. It's a Heisman story. Les Horvath won the 1944 Heisman Trophy at Ohio State. And after school, he got married, moved to L.A. His wife didn't know a ton about football, but she couldn't understand why he insisted on putting this gaudy big trophy of a football player in the living room. And he tried to explain to her that this is, you know, means a lot. It's a big deal. You know, it's the Heisman Trophy, you know, really, you know, and again, her not being a football fan just kind of went over her head. So a week later, they went out to dinner and they went to Tom Harmon's house and they go in for dinner and Tom Harmon's got his Heisman Trophy on display in the living room. And then a week later, they went to the home of Heisman winner Glenn Davis in 1946, and his Heisman Trophy was in the middle of the living room. And apparently on the way home, the wife looked at Les Horvath and said, "I have no idea why we have to keep this thing in our living room. Everybody we know has one."
Great story. It's all about the company you keep.
And then the fight started.
Exactly. Exactly. That must've been something to live in that circle.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, well, that brings us to our next section, which is
the Populist.
The Populist. And that's where we find out how you, the listeners, felt on the subject. And we tallied up your votes and came up with your top 10 list. A lot of ties. A lot of ties this time around. And I do mean a lot. Number 10, we had a tie, and it was Doug Flutie, Earl Campbell, the running back from Texas, and Charles Woodson, the only defensive player to win, and the purely defensive player from Michigan. Number 9 was a 5-way tie. We had Desmond Howard. We also had Ron Dayne from Wisconsin, who actually just missed my list. Robert Griffin III, quarterback from Baylor. Matt Leinart, quarterback from USC. Johnny Manziel, quarterback from Texas A&M. That's a big tie for number 9. Number 8 was Tony Dorsett, Chris Wenke, the FSU quarterback, and Charles White, the USC tailback. Number 7, all by himself, was the only 2-time winner, Archie Griffin. So he's kind of like a tie by himself. Number 6, we had tie of Baker Mayfield, Herschel Walker, Andre Ware, quarterback from Houston, Mike Rozier, and Devontae Smith, this year's winner from Alabama. Number 5 was a tie of Tim Tebow, Ty Detmer, Lamar Jackson. Number 4, by himself, Ricky Williams from Texas. Number 3, Kyler Murray. Number 2, Joe Burrow. And number 1 was a tie of Barry Sanders, Marcus Allen, and Bo Jackson. Bo knows populists.
A lot of brand names on that list.
Yeah, and I think that's to be expected sometime because it did take a lot of research and not all of our listeners have the time to do the same research we're doing. So I can understand that, and that's forgivable. But also, we didn't have as many voters this time, and those ties start to smooth themselves out when more people vote. So keep on voting, folks. We do like it, even though when there are ties, we love your input and vote, vote, vote. So that wraps up the populist segment and takes us now to the A-list. This is the segment where Kirk and I talk about positive people who make a positive impact in the world or people who've just impressed us with their kind deeds and their overall approach to life. Kirk, who is your A-lister this week?
My A-lister is someone and something that is very close to me, and that is Terry Clark and the entire team at the Space Coast Early Intervention Center down in Melbourne, Florida. Last weekend, I headed down to Melbourne and did an event for, I think, the 22nd or 23rd year in a row that raised money for the school. Friend of the podcast, D. Vincent Williams, went down there to play. I went down there to help produce the show and host it a little bit. But this school in this small community on the Florida Space Coast is incredible. They take preschool kids, and now they're actually expanding into the lower elementary, that have kids that are typically developing and non-typically developing kids, and put them in the same classrooms so that they begin to understand one another, to interact with one another, that the typically developing kids act as wonderful role models. And it's an opportunity for these teachers, these wonderful teachers, to look at each child and determine how they best learn. If a student works better through visuals or audio or tactile, they'll focus on that and help build up some of those strengths and use that to create an overall education. They've been doing it for about 35 years will be next year. So they've been doing it for quite some time. I also salute Tim Wakefield, who started the fundraising effort for this school 25 years ago, which is how I got involved in the tournament as well. But it's been one of the great joys of my life to be part of that, and to go down there and raise almost $100,000 last weekend to help support the school was terrific. Congrats to the Space Coast Early Intervention Center, and they are my A-listers.
Great choice. I know that they've been such an important part of your life. I salute them as well. My A-lister is somebody that most people, at least in this country, have heard about recently, and that is the Capitol Police Officer Eugene Goodman. He's a U.S. Army vet who served in Iraq, and he was serving as a Capitol Police Officer, and he was the guy that you've probably seen who led a large group of rioters away from the entrance to the Senate chambers, kept them occupied with his presence until police backup could come to assist. Very brave man. He was definitely against the odds. He rose to the occasion, and he's been recognized as such. He got promoted to acting deputy Senate sergeant in arms, got to escort Kamala Harris and her husband to the inauguration ceremony. And many Congress members feel that he saved many, many lives on that day and are calling for him to be recognized with the Congressional Medal of Honor. So we'll see where that goes. But props to you, Eugene Goodman, and to all of our A-listers, both this week and always.
Great choice.
Okay. Well, that about does it for our show. And that puts a lid on the first mega month, which was all about college football. We will do another mega month sometime down the list. I figure we'll probably do a couple of them a year. But that was fun. Coming up, we'll be back to our normal stuff. And for Valentine's week, we're going to be doing best romantic comedy movies. So you and I should choose very wisely on these.
I think Jill and Sean might be helping us out on these.
Yeah, and the other female listeners that we have also might have an opinion as well. So please vote, and also go on the website and use the comment section. Tell us where we got it right or got it wrong, as Kirk likes to say. And we'll see how we do. But we'll have a lot more fun of other things coming up as well.
Yeah, I enjoyed the Mega Month. I thought that was a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to doing the next one. Wherever you go for your podcasts, you can find us. That's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, Google, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and so many more. We are a member of the Buzzsprout community, and Populist is a Vintage Year production.
That's right. And as I mentioned before, visit our website at populistpodcast.net to check out what we've done in the past. You can hear our episodes. You can vote on the upcoming polls. And it's just a good resource for all things populist. It's good seeing you guys. We appreciate you, each and every one of you. We love our listeners. And keep tuning in. We promise to have more fun for you down the road. That's it, everybody. See you next time.
Stay safe, everyone.